Looking pretty great to be gay in the USA. Gay marriage has been legalized in several states, and it's just a matter of time before it's legal throughout the US. We've got openly gay NFL football players now, so surely we are living in a modern utopia where everyone gets equal treatment and acceptance. Mission accomplished? Maybe not so much. I'm your host, Emma Bracon, and today we are talking to Susanna Walters about her new book, The Tolerance Trap, How God, genes, and good intentions are sabotaging gay equality. She's here to rain on your pride parade and tell us all exactly how much further we still have to march as a society before real equality is achieved. Next on Through the Eyes of Women.
Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women, a program for, about, and by women. News and interviews concerning the lives and times of women, local, national, and international.
Susanna Walters is not buying your tolerance, not at all. Apparently, if we want credit for being hip and evolved and modern, it's going to take a lot more than grimacing through your cousin's same-sex wedding without making any awkward anatomical jokes. So let's get to work. Hi, Susanna. Welcome to Through the Eyes of Women.
Hi. I have to say that's one of the best introductions I've heard.
Oh, shucks. Thank you. Well, it's great to have you here. This is a really exciting topic. I think a lot of us are pretty confused. I think a lot of us think we're pretty cool. So let's go straight to the title of your book. It's kind of provocative. Let's talk about that.
Well, let me say a proviso. I do want to rain on everyone's parade. It's true. There's no doubt things have changed enormously. I would be the last person to say that this is just a smokescreen. Things have changed enormously since when I came out over 30 years ago. It is a hugely different world, both in terms of basic civil rights, marriage just being one of them, but in terms of public consciousness and visibility of gays and lesbians in culture and so on. But I do think there is a way in which, and this is what motivated me to write the book, there's a way in which we're all sort of patting ourselves on the back right now. We really are, both gays and straights, frankly, you know, and saying, boy, let's pack up our tutus, you know, we've won the battle here. The move for gay marriage has really been quite successful, and gays are, you know, on television and in movies, and even now in the NFL, and we think, oh, my God, the revolution's over.
If I can just jump in there, they've always been on television and the movies and music and stand-up comedy. They just weren't always out, because I found out decades later that a lot of my idols growing up were actually gay.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, gays have always been there. They just haven't been as visible or knowable as gay and as publicly gay. That's absolutely true. But, you know, even this kind of visibility that we're heralding now is problematic and limited. I mean, the most current thing, of course, is this case of Michael Sam, the football player, who everyone's celebrating and now everyone's angry at because he's kissed his boyfriend on television. And to me, it's actually a sign of how far we haven't come. I mean, the fact that this is news, good news or bad news, that this is something that has created a media frenzy. People are apoplectic that he's kissed someone. People are apoplectic that he's out. People are beside themselves with excitement that he's out. This is really one of those examples of glass is very half empty. This is not a sign that things have changed. This is a sign of how far we still have to go. I mean, the fact that this is news, that we care, that there's a conversation about him kissing his boyfriend is actually sad.
Do you think that there's a certain amount of fixation on the locker room since we're talking about football? Is it all about the showers, or does it go a little beyond that?
Oh, I think it goes beyond that. I think that is the smokescreen. They said the same thing when the attempt to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and that was going on in the military. It's all about the showers. I don't know. Straight men have some fascination with or obsession with showers. I don't know what's going on with that. But no, it's not about that. It is about our continued discomfort, animus, hatred towards lesbians and gays. And there's no other way to put it. And, you know, a moment like this where people react with such horror at a kiss, you know, and say such silly things like, well, your children could be watching this, and how are you going to talk to your children about this, again, reveals to me how far we still have to go. in gaining a really robust and meaningful kind of inclusion, not just this kind of tepid tolerance.
So getting back to that, what's wrong with tolerance? Aren't we all supposed to be tolerant?
Tolerance is a funny thing. I mean, tolerance is certainly better than outright hatred, you know? I mean, I'll take tolerance over being gay-bashed any day. But when you think about the word, we tolerate things we would really do without. We'd rather do without. We tolerate an irritating neighbor or a boring movie or a meeting that never seems to end. We don't talk about tolerating a beautiful sunny day. Here in Boston, we have one now. We don't talk about tolerating great sex or tolerating a wonderful meal. We talk about tolerance for things that we would rather not have, that we dislike, that we'd rather do without. So tolerance is a very low bar to set when we're thinking about the real and robust inclusion of a minority group into full citizenship. And I should say, I mean, I've always been surprised at how much for gays and lesbians we rely on this language of tolerance and acceptance, because I don't think in the history of great social movements that's really where we have landed. When you look at the civil rights movement and you look at the women's movement, in none of those movements was the language of tolerance the defining feature. We didn't talk in the women's movement about, you know, tolerate our gender difference. You know, we said we want equal rights, equal pay, full inclusion. They didn't talk about tolerating a different skin pigmentation. They talked about really doing away with and undermining racism and racist privilege. So it's very disturbing to me that we've reached a point in the movement when we've set the bar so very low that all we ask for is tolerance. And I think tolerance actually undermines the potential for a more thoroughgoing kind of freedom and liberation. I mean, if all you ask for is tolerance, that's all you're going to get.
Is it possible that it's a sign of how far we've come if we had to begin this movement setting the bar at tolerance, and now in 2014 we can question that and say, is that good enough? Is that our pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? Maybe if we can call tolerance a trap, does that mean that we've actually come farther than we think?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, I actually think historically it's been a funny backwards movement here, certainly for most of the history of the gay rights movement, both before and after Stonewall. Tolerance was not the language. I mean, the Gay Liberation Front in the 60s, you know, asked for freedom and particularly challenged gender normativities and gender roles and really pushed back against notions of the nuclear family and women's roles in families and so on. So the idea that tolerance is sort of the defining feature of the way we talk about gay rights is actually pretty new. Certainly for even my own history in the movement, that wasn't part of how we talked about things. I mean, even if you think back to, you know, not so long ago to Queer Nation and Gay Pride, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. It's very different than, you know, we're here, we're kind of gay, be nice to us. Which is, I think, where we are now. We're not going to be demanding of our rights, but we would like to be tolerated. So in a sense, there's been a backwards movement, I think.
So is this a discussion within the so-called community?
Absolutely. I mean, I do think one thing that's true is that within the gay rights community, broadly construed, all kinds of debates are flourishing. For example, the whole debate around marriage. I mean, if you looked at the popular media, you'd think that all gays want is to get married and that there's no disagreement within the gay movement about both this as a priority for the movement, but also the whole institution itself and how much we want to be a part of that. But there has been a very robust and active debate within gay rights movements and in various communities about all kinds of issues, including the notion of tolerance, including the biological arguments, this born this way kinds of arguments, and including marriage rights. But what is a shame is that those debates and arguments rarely see the light of day. I certainly see them in the academy and as a professor, but I think the popular idea is that gay rights equals gay marriage. And now that they're getting their gay marriage, you know, and they've got their gay football player and a couple gay people on TV, that, you know, the party's over. And part of why I wrote this book, I think, is to push back or challenge that a bit to say, you know, not only is it more complicated than that, but gay rights is not to be equated with a single civil right like marriage.
And what is the gay, anti-gay marriage position?
Oh, boy, that's a complicated one. There are a lot of different arguments to be made around that, and they have been made about that. I think there's one thing almost all of us agree on, no matter what your political persuasion, which is that this is a basic civil right. And, you know, it's a no-brainer. I certainly feel that way, and I think most gays on any part of the political spectrum would argue, of course, gays should have a right to be married, just like if they're citizens, you have a right to all of the benefits of citizenship. That being said, there have been a number of critiques about marriage from the gay movement, particularly from lesbians. One of them, of course, has to do with priorities, about setting a priority so that all of our resources, financial and political and cultural, go into marriage. And I'll tell you, that really has happened. I mean, do a search for gay rights, and what you will get 9 times out of 10 is gay marriage. When polls are done asking about people's beliefs about gay rights, what they actually ask in the text is about whether they believe gays should have the right to marry. So we've gotten to a situation where all of the complexities of gay rights and of sexual freedom have been reduced to the marriage question, which is really a shame. I mean, we can take a lesson here from the women's movement. We never reduced feminism to one single right. It was about a change in consciousness, which was deep and thoroughgoing. So abortion rights might have been part of it. Equal pay might have been part of it. Child care and flexible workplace might have been part of it. You know, fighting violence against women, but never a single thing. I don't think any social movement has done that. And I'm very concerned, and I think a lot of us are concerned, that the gay movement has just banked everything on this one issue. And, of course, resources get diverted, financial resources, for fighting, for example, issues of homelessness amongst gay youth. Those gay youth centers get defunded as money goes into fighting for gay marriage rights. So I think that's one of the problems, is a resource and allocation problem. But, of course, from a feminist perspective, there's been a long, as I'm sure you're aware, a long and active critique of the institution of marriage. Marriage is an institution that was founded and begun with the ownership of women and children by men. And it is an institution that has been notable as the site of the reproduction of inequitous relations between men and women. So the idea that marriage is the brass ring that will somehow give us freedom and legitimacy, given the history of marriage and of violence within marriage, is a kind of ironic if it weren't so sad.
In addition to marriage equality and looking out for homeless gay youth, what else should we be talking about? What else should be on the gay agenda?
Oh, there's so many things. I mean, I do think that the fact that we haven't been able to pass ENDA yet is really something we need to continue to work on. I mean, that has been brought up in Congress for so many years now, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, so that it's still legal federally to discriminate, to fire people on the basis of their sexuality. So the fact that we haven't been able to move on that is troubling, and I think we do need to gain that. I think questions of immigration rights, I think questions of economic equity and health care, I mean, those are questions for gays and lesbians. Questions about the prison complex, those are questions for gays and lesbians, not just marriage. There's a disproportionate number of gay youth, as I said, on the streets and homeless. There's disproportionate numbers of gay youth who are suicidal and harm themselves. We need to address all of those. And we also need to address still, in a deeper way, these questions of consciousness, of how people, you know, the same way feminism still needs to struggle with that. We might have gotten equal pay acts passed, and we might have gotten sort of illegal to discriminate on the basis of gender, but every woman knows that the struggle to really change consciousness remains an ongoing struggle, an ongoing work for everyone involved in the women's movement. And I think that's true for everyone involved in the gay and lesbian movement. I mean, I can see a future where these basic rights might be in place, but the animus and the discomfort with sexual difference might remain. And that's the level we've got to work more deeply on.
You are listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I'm your host, Emma Brecon, and we're talking to Susanna Walters about her book, The Tolerance Trap, How God, Genes, and Good Intentions Are Sabotaging Gay Equality. Susanna, let's break it down. Going by the title of your book, how is God sabotaging gay equality?
Well, not directly, let me just say that. That really is referencing one of what I think is one of the circulating ideas about gayness in our culture right now, which is that God made me this way. So part of what I'm doing in the book is actually looking at not just, and in fact not much, conservative or Christian or right-wing attacks on gays and lesbians. What I'm actually looking at is the ways in which progressives and liberals who think they are doing the good fight and that they're on the right side of these issues, I'm looking at how they frame, how we frame gay rights and challenging some of the ideas underlying that. So one of them, for example, is this God made me this way. The idea that, again, you can base civil rights on a religious precept, on some religious inevitability. And it's interestingly linked, I think, to another part of that book, which is about the born this way argument, or the idea that there's some genetic or endocrinological predisposition towards homosexuality, and that therefore one should be given one's rights on the basis that one can't help oneself. Like tolerance, it's a very low bar for getting social and civic rights. And in fact, that's become, I think, one of our most dominant ways of thinking about gayness in our culture, is that it is biologically predetermined. I tell you, that is one that I, no matter where I speak, what environment, whether it's a university or outside the university, people of good faith with good intentions believe that not only that that is true, that that's good science, but they also believe, which it isn't, but they also believe that that is what good thinking people feel, that if you support gay rights, you're going to believe that gays can't help themselves, that it's predetermined. And if you're anti-gay rights, you believe in choice, that people choose to be gay. Of course, the supposition underlying that is that there's something wrong with it. Why are you asking the question about an origin? It's the wrong question to ask, but it's also no ground to talk about rights. And certainly women have been much more resistant to this idea because women know how biologically determinist arguments have been used against us. That was the old arguments. Oh, no, women can't do that work because, you know, they'll go crazy when they get their periods, you know, or women can't do that work because of their reproductive capacities. So rooting civil rights on biology in any way is, I think, a very dangerous ground.
Okay, we've covered God, we've covered genes, good intentions. What are some things that a so-called straight ally, what are some things we're doing right, please?
Lots of things. Look, we're doing lots of things right. As I said, you know, I wouldn't want to be this is a better world. There's no question about it. This is meant as a strong but gentle challenge to straight allies. It really is a book, and you got that right. This is a book for straight allies. I think one of the things that folks are doing right is some of this very process of alliances, the whole movement of gay-straight alliances that have swept over high schools and junior high schools, I think is an amazing thing. I can't imagine how different my life might have been as a young person if I had had those kinds of groups available to me when I was a kid.
Really? Do they need us to be their allies? That was my next question. Do gay people even need straight allies? Are we helping?
Well, I think anyone helps when you work to fight prejudice. So, you know, whether you want to call it ally, whether that's the right language is a tough question. But every minority group that is fighting for its rights needs the majority group to step up. Now, you don't necessarily need to call allies. That might be the wrong kind of language to use. And I know a lot of people have problems with that, that it can seem sort of patronizing. But certainly, we feminists need male feminists to stand up And, you know, women who are fighting against violence against women, they much more need men to stop being violent and to work to end violence against women and raise consciousness of men in that regard. So I do think straight people do need to step up, but I think they need to step up not around tolerance and acceptance, because I think every time you use that word, you have to think, who are you to tolerate me? What does that mean? And I think instead, straight allies need to talk about gender and sexual freedom, about learning from differences, not accepting them, but actually changing them. So, for example, when we think about gay marriage, there are many different ways to talk about same-sex marriage. One way to talk about it is for gay people to say, don't worry, when we get married, we're not going to change your marriages at all. It won't affect you at all. We just want in. We're not going to bother you at all. Another way is to say, hey, straight married couple, maybe you can actually look at what it is to be in a relationship where gender isn't the defining feature and actually learn something from it. One of the things, for example, we know is that the gender division of labor in the home remains a real problem. Women still do the majority of childcare and still do the vast majority of domestic labor in the home. This has gone on forever. So wouldn't it be interesting if straight allies said, huh, maybe gay marriage will make me think differently about intimacy, about how to organize kinship and family. So instead of asking the question, for example, when we talk about gay parents and their children, and I have a 19-year-old daughter, you know, instead of asking the question, well, do those kids do as well as kids of straight parents? Maybe we'll ask, what can we learn? Maybe those kids are thinking about gender in broader and more expansive and more embracing terms. In other words, to say difference makes a difference, right? Difference actually matters. And that's a very different language than tolerance and acceptance. And I think there are straight people who are doing that. There was the pastor at the Washington Cathedral in D.C., and he made a wonderful speech, it was 6 months or so ago, where he actually made this argument to his congregants and said, he was making a pro-gay marriage argument, and he said, listen, gay marriage should change the way we think about relationships and should challenge, particularly challenge, the kind of patriarchal or male, you know, binary opposition between men and women that are so often the way marriages are structured. And it was a wonderful, wonderful speech. So I do think allies are often going beyond this idea of tolerance and acceptance and really saying, how is the way I think about love, intimacy, sex, family, change when I really embrace gay culture and gay difference?
Is there any chance that it may have become fashionable recently for members of a marginalized group to kind of bash their allies and say that we're doing it wrong or not enough in it with them or anything like that?
That's a good question. I don't think it's, no, I mean, I don't feel that that's what's happening at all. I actually feel that more of the opposite is happening. The gay movement and gay activists are so overjoyed to be making some progress that there's often not enough of a challenge to go further and to push allies, because you're always afraid, oh, if I push allies too much and supporters, they're going to, you know, react badly. And I actually think we're at a moment now. I think straight people can take it. I mean, I think straight people can take me saying to them, hey, you know what? Don't talk about tolerance. Talk about real inclusion. I mean, I think there have been moments in other social movements where there's been that sort of challenge to allies and challenge to supporters to not just be sort of arm's length, you know, kind of supporters, but to really think deeply about what the issues are raised around social movements. And so I don't think there's a bashing going on. I actually think it's the opposite. Everybody's too quiescent. I think people are just, you know, particularly because the marriage stuff has been so successful. So I think we are a little too celebratory, and we need to step back a bit. I mean, look, I want to celebrate things too. I can't stress that enough. But in the midst of a celebration, we also need to look at where we need to go and what kinds of ways that we're celebrating might actually undermine that.
What is real full citizenship for gays going to look like?
I'll tell you, I mean, I do think when we stop talking about a football player kissing another man will begin to even address that question. We are so far from that. One thing we know from the women's movement, from the civil rights movement, is that getting your basic rights is part of full citizenship, but it's not the end. It's a necessary condition, but it's not the whole shebang. We've got a black president. We thought, are we post-racial? Is race no longer a problem? Hardly. I think full citizenship comes about when you really continuously are vigilant about thinking through the vestiges and continuation of racism, for example, the vestiges and continuation of homophobia, where it comes from, how it finds new homes, even when it gets pushed this way and that way. Full citizenship will be a world in which gayness is celebrated, is what same-sex love and intimacy and sexuality offers, trickles through our society in ways it's not just about acceptance, but about, real exploration of difference. We're really beyond a language of tolerance.
And then, Susanna, as we get ready to wrap up our time together today, any just final thoughts or hints, course markers on how we're going to get there from here?
I don't have a map. I don't have the yellow brick road to get us to Oz here. But I do think that we need to, in some ways, reignite or re-embrace some of the feisty, radical challenges that earlier moments of the gay movement championed. I mean, I know people have said some of the same things around the women's movement, and I think that's true, that we need to think again of the language of pride and the language of gay is good. Gay is something that's not about to be tolerated or accepted, but a wonderful way of being in the world. I think those are some of the ways we can push past or push through the limitations of tolerance and the ways in which tolerance just undermines or cheapens the fluidity and beauty of sexual difference and the expression of sexuality in all its multifarious forms.
Well, Susanna, thank you so much for coming on to Through the Eyes of Women today. You've given us a lot to think about and a lot to work on.
Oh, this was delightful. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Emma Burkhan, and I've been speaking with Susanna Walters, author of The Tolerance Trap. For more information, visit thetolerancetrap.com. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to our executive producer and today's engineer, Kathleen Marshall, and to our audio editor, Beth Rogers. To listen to this program again in the next 2 weeks, go to khsu.org, click on Web Audio, then Audio Archives. You can also listen to it anytime on Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives, where you can learn more about the show, view the upcoming schedule, or post listener comments. Visit our blog at www.khsuwomen.wordpress.com. And be sure to join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.
My 1951 Webster's Dictionary describes jazz as a syncopated music hilarious and often boisterous. Maybe by mid-20th century standards, but today it is so much more. I'm Tom Cairns. Join me on Mughouse Jazz Mondays at 8 p.m. for 2 hours of jazz exploring a music that has evolved much since that definition was written many years ago, here on KHSU.
During the time I've been fighting cancer, I went to start taking pictures, and it helped me get through all the things with cancer, and I made it.
Smokey Bill Harper's photography in Crescent City, and...
So really are important to us to break that fourth wall of theater and have the audience heckle us and have them cheer us on.
Vardi Gras at the Mateel. All this on the next Art Waves on Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. on KHSU.
The Broadcasting from the campus of Humboldt State University, this is KHSU-FM 90.5 Arcata, KHSR 91.9 Crescent City, KHSG 89.9 Barberville. Just about 2 o'clock, West Coast time, NorCal time, or Southern Oregon time. My name is Mike, and this is In the Trees.